Good afternoon and welcome to the Jason Ranch Show on AM 770 KTTH. Streaming on all those smart speakers like Amazon Echo and Google Home. Oops, they did it again at Echo Glen. Juvenile inmates with shanks set fire to a room. They made some demands and no one else is reporting it. That is what's trending.
What's trending? A Jason Rant exclusive.
It's another one of those stories that, while I'm glad to have the exclusive, it's odd to me that no one seems interested in covering the total mess at Echo Glen Juvenile Center or Children's Center. It's a correctional facility for juvies. It's where you send truly bad kids. And to get to that place in Washington State, it takes a lot. For anyone to be incarcerated, whether it's medium security or not, it takes a lot. And now we know the level of kids we're dealing with. Some of these kids were armed with shanks. They set fire to property. They made a curious demand. And one of the juveniles who was allegedly involved is serving time for murder too. Now, King County Sheriff's deputies were alerted a little after midnight on Saturday, or so technically Sunday morning, that this was going on at Echo Glen. I got a chance to review the dispatch audio. Now, the responding deputies were warned about what they were going to run into.
Kids have locked themselves in a room and have started it on fire. Echo Glen Children's Center, 33010 Southeast 99th Street.
So we have fire up.
Affirm.
This occurred at Cottage 9. There are several different cottages on this campus. By the time several units arrived, the good news was the fire was extinguished. There was no fire there. And that allowed the deputies a little bit of time to stage at the facility and try to figure out, okay, what exactly is going to be our plan? Snoqualmie PD got involved. They sent officers there to assist. They brought with them non-lethal tools, specifically the 400-millimeter or 40-millimeter soft-nose gun. Those are the ones that shoot the soft-sponge rounds, the ones that Democrats in their anti-gun bill stupidly banned, and then they had to undo that. They brought ballistic shields that can stop bullets, but really it's to stop the sharp objects like shanks being used, should they actually have to breach and go into this room. The kids made a curious demand.
Nothing's really on fire. There's six juveniles and they're breaking free. Copy. Nothing's on fire. Go ahead. It's a brick building. The only thing they could burn is possibly like mattresses and stuff like that. They're just demanding McDonald's and other kind of ridiculous stuff. They do have shanks. They've seen them. They held them up. So we're just going to stay here, figure out a game plan. They're locked in there. They can't get out.
They're locked in there. And they can't get out, which from their perspective, obviously, there's a danger for those kids, anyone who's in there. But it gave them a little bit of extra time, the deputies, to figure out what they were going to do. Now, eventually, they get the crisis negotiation team to show up. They're the ones who, as the title of their name suggests, negotiate. And at one point, almost at, 12:49 a.m., we learned that there are some kids who want nothing to do with what was going on there. They want nothing to do with it, leaving them with the six bad apples.
There's six total involved. One of them is in here for murder, too. Break. Go ahead. And for David, there's a total of three uninvolved in the facility, which we're going to have removed by staff members here. So we have a total of six involved. They're currently locked up somewhat in the side of the building, but we're going to remove three who are uninvolved, and for David, I'll be incident commander.
Now, after that happened, 30 minutes goes by. At approximately 1:26 a.m., a team of five deputies with the crisis negotiation team, they started to negotiate. By 1:43, some of the juveniles ended up surrendering. 11 minutes later, 1:54, all six ended up getting in custody. There were no injuries reported. What I found to be curious was that according to the King County Sheriff's Office, The kids were then returned to the custody of the staff. I don't know if any charges are going to be filed. This makes it seem like no. We're just going to return them to the same place where they were holed up with weapons having set fire. There doesn't seem to be a whole lot of consequences for these kids. Echo Glen has been plagued by concerns about safety due to the fact that, like so many other departments in Washington State, they have low staffing. Now, this particular agency, this is the Department of Child, Youth, and Families, DCYF. They fired a whole bunch of people just like other agencies over the vaccine mandate. How many maybe worked at Echo Glen? How many maybe could have been put at Echo Glen? Don't know. But we know that there have been a staffing crisis involved at DCYF, in particular Echo Glen, for a very, very long time, and it makes it way easier for juveniles like this to act out. How did they set a fire? How did they do that? Where did they get the matches, the lighter? How did they do that? How is it they keep getting shanks? You'll remember last year, a couple big incidents happened. Number one, you had the breakout, five dangerous juveniles. They broke out, took a manhunt. They finally caught the kids. Some turned themselves in. Months after that, we reported on the show exclusively that there was a riot with what King County Sheriff's Office and staff members at Echo Glen claimed were with shanks and machetes. They committed a ton of damage to the facility. No consequences. You've got staff members with Echo Glen speaking out, saying, we don't feel safe here. There was this one woman, a staff member there. She didn't identify herself. She spoke with Fox 13 off camera, but they had her voice. And she had pointed out that within a year, she was assaulted two times. She was assaulted two times. Oh, no, excuse me. You should have corrected that. You should have known that that was too low. Three times. Imagine that. 1 year, three assaults.
Three times.
And she's concerned, like so many others. Has the state done anything? Have they talked about doing anything? Have they addressed this in any way, shape, or form? It appears not. It appears nothing has changed that adequately addressed the concerns. But for me, this is about kids who are, at this point, unfortunately, irredeemable. They will be out of jail soon, including the Murder 2 kid. They are committing crimes while in prison. Think about that. Do they seem redeemable to you? And instead of keeping more kids like this at Echo Glen or elsewhere, we're putting them into restorative justice programs. I guarantee you that every single one of those kids who finds themselves there, except maybe the Murder 2 kid, they went through restorative justice program after restorative justice program. They were given endless chances, only to continue to break the law. And they're continuing that behavior, allegedly, at Echo Glen. This seems like a big story. It's odd no one wants to talk about it other than KTTH. But I guess we'll take it. If you want to hear the full, well, not the full audio. I edited it down because it was like 2.5 hours. So I edited it till about 6.5 minutes-ish, give or take.
Yeah.
If you want to listen to it, I find this stuff fascinating. I don't know why. I just do. It's kind of interesting to see how things unfold in the background. You can go to ktth.com or just text the keyword rants, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in the classroom?
For those of you who live in the Puyallup School District, you have probably noticed that your kid's bus has been getting canceled a lot. And I mean a lot, like every single day. There's a listener who follows me on Instagram who's been sending me screenshots of the alerts that she's been getting almost every single day from the district saying, your school bus route has been canceled. Please make other plans. Now imagine you're getting that in the morning, early in the morning, needing to try to figure out, what do I do? You've got work. Maybe you've got another kid you got to take care of. Only to have this put on you, this burden. So the school board is acknowledging, and this was a huge story last year, that school bus contractors around the state and really around the country are short. They're short-staffed. So the Puyallup School Board has come together and they created this task force. And they said, we don't want to do the hard work, so we're going to create this task force. You tell us, what can we do to address this issue? And they determined what they could do might include terminating routes, changing routes, or, and this is the one that's going to sting for some folks if they do it, changing class times. There is this push to start class later for certain kids. They do their brains aren't developed. Okay. But the reality is, it's going to cause a whole lot of problems for parents who work or who have other responsibilities that they need to tend to at the new time that you have class first start. Tacoma News Tribune says the school district issued a survey back in January asking how a bell schedule change could impact families. The survey got over 3,300 responses. One of the biggest concerns is childcare. Costs may increase if times need to be adjusted to accommodate a new bell schedule. When you've got kids who you can't take care of early in the morning, now that they've changed the schedule, if they change the schedule, you're going to have to make plans for them. That's what you're going to have to do. If you have a work schedule where you're working later in the evening and you're used to being able to pick up your kid whenever school gets out, what is it, 3:30?
Something like that.
If that works for you, but 4:30 doesn't or 5:30 doesn't, whatever the new schedule might be, you're going to have to figure that out. You're going to have to get someone else to pick up your kid. So all of this has consequences. And something tells me they're going to move forward with the most burdensome response to the crisis rather than address the crisis. Can you not work harder to get more bus drivers? I know why people don't want to be bus drivers. They don't seem like great jobs. Seems very repetitive. You're going to have to deal with bratty kids the entire time. Or, I mean, some of the bus drivers, they just ignore them, and then some kid gets bullied and it gets on TV, and then they get fired, and then they promise to stop things. But it seems
to me, like a great sales pitch. Jeez.
We've had this problem for a very long time. Has no one been addressing why there's a bus driver shortage this entire time? The story is not new. I mean, it's new in the sense that it's happening right now, but this issue has been going on for a year, more than that, across the board. And then all of a sudden, it stopped. Coverage stopped. Districts stopped talking about it. Parents stopped saying anything. But the crisis never got fixed. So maybe you got a little bit of a reprieve, but it ends up catching up with people, as problems tend to do. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
Oh, gosh. Fox 13 has this story. It's based on a quote-unquote study, but it's really just a press release for a blog. But this one at least feels a little bit more real. Smart Asset is a financial technology company, and they looked at the after-tax income in 76 of the largest U.S. cities. Don't know why they did 76 and not, 50 or 75. They went with 76, probably to get people like me to wonder and then say Smart Asset 10 more times. But then I realize if I say it fast, I'm going to screw up and say a bad word. They adjusted those figures for the cost of living in each city. And they compared what a $100,000 salary would truly be worth when it comes to buying power. Now, they say $100,000 used to be one of those benchmarks that people strived for. I don't know if, when that stopped. I don't know if that's still, is that still the ideal? Like, you would consider yourself a success if you made $100,000 a year? You're about 90 grand away from it, so maybe you're that person to ask. Or maybe you're the perfect person.
I think I'm successful.
But you don't make $100,000, do you?
You know how much I make.
I do, but I can't say that out loud.
No.
I need you to concede it. So which is kind of my point. I don't know if people still look at a salary as a means to consider themselves a success. I think that used to be a case. I think that used to be an ideal. Whether or not it was $100,000, I don't know, but it was tied to salary. I don't think it's tied to salary anymore, but we'll go with this. Now, they say the best place to live as far as how far your $100,000 can get you is Memphis, Tennessee. They say $100,000 is basically $86,000 when you take into account the after-tax deduction and the, cost of living. So 86 grand. Seattle, on the list of 76, was number 10. They were the 10 worst. 100,000, and I'm assuming they mean the Seattle metro area, not Seattle specifically. So this accounts for Tacoma, Everett, Bellevue, just the Seattle metro area. 100,000 is the equivalent of 48,959. I don't know if I believe that per se, but it seems to be more accurate than not. My guess is, and again, it all depends. If you're single versus you've got kids, if you've got a husband or wife and kids and they're bringing in money, I think it all matters. It seems a little bit dramatic for me. I don't know quite how they figured out that number. Usually, I was talking with someone else here. Usually when we talk about cost of living, there's an assumption that you should not spend more than a third of your salary on rent or on your mortgage. I don't necessarily buy into that thinking. I think it's an old way of thinking about things. But if that's what they're looking at, 48.5, that sounds a little bit low to me. I would have guessed 60.
It sounds dramatic. I believe the study that Seattle has high cost of living and
clearly
associated costs. But yeah, that number does seem kind of dramatic.
The worst is New York, where $100,000 is basically the equivalent of $35,791 take-home pay. That's nuts. That one I totally believe because
that's crazy.
I've looked at the rent there just because I'm always curious. Everyone talks about how expensive it is. And I follow these Instagram accounts where real estate agents will pretend that they stop someone at random on the street and say, "Hey, do you rent?" "I do rent." "What's your rent?" "It's $4,300 a year." "Can I see?" "Sure, come on with me. Let's take you home." It's so bad.
Those are the worst.
It really is. But they are really, really high there, and everything is more expensive in New York. And yet, kind of like Seattle, you don't really get a nice return on your investment. It would be one thing to spend a lot, but then truly be happy with the quality of life. You've got parks that are clean, sidewalks that are clean. You feel safe walking down the street at night. You don't have a high crime rate. It seems to me every time it gets more expensive to live in any of these areas, they get worse. It's odd, isn't it? Seattle, as when you look at the chart of rent hikes or housing costs, and you look at the rise in crime, they're going to run perpendicular to each other upward. It is, right? It's just, or parallel, not perpendicular, parallel. It's odd the way that that works. And I don't know why. I know what's driving it in the sense that it's Democrat policy or spending habits. There are Democrats who just are addicted to tax dollars, and so when you're able to tax them higher, you will do so, and you won't spend the money very well. And then you'll blame Republicans for all of your faults. They do that with here in Seattle all the time. Number two is Honolulu, which I'm assuming is because it's an island and it's just built-in cost of living increases. Their take-home pay is equivalent to $36,026. San Francisco, barely better than that, $36,400. D.C. is $44,000. Long Beach and L.A. are both tied at $44,000. That's nonsense. Long Beach is not that expensive. San Diego, 46.1. So kind of in the ballpark. These are all the cities you shouldn't live in and should avoid, like the plague or like COVID or
so
like a Democrat.
You're counting avoiding Seattle?
Yeah. Do you think Seattle is worth it? You just got a new apartment or you're about to.
Yeah.
Correct? Have you moved in yet?
No. Good. End of the month.
So think about it for a bit.
Me to back out. Is that what you're saying?
Do you think, now I know the rent that you're paying and it happens to be reasonable.
I got a good deal.
Yeah, you got lucky. Do you have roommates?
One.
Okay, that's why it's that. Never mind. Now you're. Do you know this person?
Not really.
Stranger?
Yeah.
Oh no. Did they know what you do for a living?
Yeah.
Did you tell them in detail, or did you say? No, I know radio.
No, I told him in detail. He's cool.
You said conservative?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He said he listens to other stations in the building.
Will he still listen to other stations in the building?
No, we'll convert them.
Okay. So my point is, do you think it's worth double what your rent is? Would you pay it? Not whether or not you can afford it. I'm asking if you think it's worth it.
To pay twice as much?
Yeah.
No.
Why? Because quality of life isn't that great. If it was, I think people are willing to spend more. People spend more on things all the time because there's some sort of benefit. I will spend more on a house because there's a pool. I will spend more on an apartment because it comes with AC or a bathtub, a soaking, things like that. People make those decisions all the time. But at some point, you do still have to look at everything else. If you leave your apartment, if you leave your home, you're going to look at everything else. You're going to look at the schools. Do you think schools in Seattle are doing well, or do you think they lean too much into the wokeness? Data suggests people are leaving because of the COVID lockdowns and because of the wokeness. We obviously know that crime is through the roof. It gets harder and harder and harder to justify spending $3,000 on like some studio apartment in Seattle when your car is getting broken into every single weekend. So all those things, they matter. And the good news is that's going to drive these numbers in the opposite direction, because when people leave, as they've been leaving in Manhattan in large numbers, you do see some positive impact on cost of living for at least the people who still stay there. So that's a positive. So in other words, don't move to Seattle because you'll bring my rent down.
Okay.
Thank you.
Noted.
He was okay with you working on a conservative talk show.
Yeah.
Is he conservative?
Down the middle, I think.
How'd you find a down the middle random roommate?
I don't know.
There's a story there. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send a text. 1-800-465-8770. The IRS continues to be aggressive. They're increasing the number of officers in Washington state, so don't try to take them on yourself. Contact our local tax expert and advocate, Greg Nunn, at Nunn Better Tax Resolution. He will help. N-U-N-N. Nunn Better Tax Resolution.
Regular business hours.
Sammamish, Kent, Olympia, Everett.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Ranch Show.
Centralia, Lakewood.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at that. 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local. Brought to you by Alpine Specialty Services, online at alpineclean.com. It's a part of the show where we completely ignore stories coming out of Seattle. And instead, we focus all of our attention on the communities you live in and care about most. We start in Everett because a family there had their car tagged with racist graffiti, except they weren't the target.
The one kid just jumped out real quick, ran over here. I don't think he was here 10 seconds, 15 seconds max. And he ran back to the car and they took off.
Okay. He tagged some unidentified racial slur on the hood of the car. Now, this feels like the story needs some context, because I'm going to assume that it was a racial slur along the lines of the N-word, because they say she wasn't targeted. And she says to Fox 13, obviously I wasn't targeted, because she's white. So was it a mistake? Did they mean to target a different car? Are these just, you know, some punk kids who think it's funny? Is it actually a slur along the lines that we would call it a slur? You know what I mean? Because there's sometimes where you're like, well, okay, just relax. Saying the B word. Oh, that's an assault on feminism. Okay, yeah, relax. That's not how it's used anymore. I'm just wondering. Because they don't tell it.
No, they never. It seems like the stupid punk kids variety.
That was
my
guess.
That's my read, but it's hard to say.
That's how I took this story. However, there is a delightful moment in this story. A truly delightful moment. That woman, Lynn, said she initially didn't notice the vandalism because I guess it's normal to have a big racial slur across the hood of your vehicle.
I have my coffee. I watch a little bit of the news. Uh-huh. I come out the door. I get in on the driver's side. I leave for work. One of the supervisors comes upstairs to where I'm working, and he says, you need to go look at your car.
Okay. I'm told by this story that this racial slur was across the entirety of the hood of the vehicle. Okay? I'm assuming it wasn't done in really small text. It's probably large and messy because the kid did it really, really quickly. It's not even so much that she didn't notice. The driver didn't notice either. Two people had to gotten in that vehicle. She said she was on the passenger side, right?
No, she said she was on the driver's side.
Oh, then she said passenger. No. Okay. So she gets in. How do you not notice that? It's on the hood of your vehicle. It's literally in front of you. If it was on, like, the top of the car or maybe the passenger side of the car, which you didn't see when you got in, okay. I got it. There was a Curb Your Enthusiasm episode about that. I get it. But how do you miss it on the hood of your car?
Was it daylight hours when she left
for work? She said it was in the morning.
Okay.
This was recent.
Yeah. I mean, I would assume...
Maybe. I mean, what time does she go into work, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, if it's like 4:30 a.m.
No, she said she's watching the news. Now, I don't know if she meant national. Detective Rance is on this case. I think the earliest that the news starts is 5, I think, or 5:30. Again, local news. I guess she could be watching Fox and Friends first. It's possible. No, I like my story better. She just didn't see it, and it was blistering sun out.
Well, my thought is maybe she backed into her driveway or something. She didn't cross the hood of the car before getting
it. How do you drive?
I don't know.
For more than 10 seconds and not see.
You don't have a car.
I know what it's like to drive.
Do you?
There are lights out. You can see. Yeah, there are.
Sounds unlikely.
What is going on? So she gets to work. They're all like, "You're a racist." And she's like, "Wait, what? Look at your car, dummy." And then she goes down and she looks. She says, thanks to the efforts of coworkers who had access to just the right solvents at a metal shop, according to Fox 13, the hateful slur was buffed right out.
It's been a friendly neighborhood. People walk with their dogs and with each other, and kids ride bikes in the road, and the parents watch out for cars, and it's been a very nice neighborhood.
Okay, well, then it was some punk kids that targeted you at random. But I don't know why this is a story. I do. This is my favorite part of the whole. This is how they end the written story. But still, as Everett police look for the suspect, a beautiful start to the weekend was disrupted by hate.
That's what it was. Yep. Nailed it. Yeah, nailed it.
Come on, man. Let's relax a little bit. My God. Was it right? No. Would my reaction be different if it was not a white person targeted with a slur that wasn't targeting white people? Sure. I would have a different opinion if it was a black family being targeted with the N-word or Asian, Latinos, Jews, whatever it is, being targeted with a specific slur. This was very clearly... She acknowledges that it was a mistake. And how bad could it have been that she didn't notice? That it just blurred right in with all the other racial slurs on her car? That was the first thing I thought of when they said she didn't see it. She didn't notice it. Did it just blend in with the other slurs? Are there other slurs on this car? Oh, God bless her. And by the way, what's the odds of them? She goes to work and they just happen to be near a place that has the right solvents to get. What did they say what the job was? I didn't see that.
I think
in the
they
story.
Said she worked at like a metal shop or something.
No, that's where they got it from. I think this metal shop was nearby.
Oh, I don't know. Oh, that's a wild story.
Oh my God. I do want to know what the word was. Find out. Call Everett PD. I want to know.
Okay.
And I want you to say it to me out in the newsroom in full. So I can get
during
it
during working hours.
Yeah, when there's free food on the newsroom table.
Ah,
because that means everyone's going to be out there. The departures lane at SeaTac was closed for about 3 hours yesterday because of unattended luggage that they ended up exploding. King 5 says the unattended luggage was near the Alaska Airlines check-in counter at the airport. It caused Alaska and American Airlines, which is right next door. Their ticketing counters to be shut down and evacuated. A spokesperson said there was no threat to the public and police were treating it like a possibly dangerous situation because of their protocol. That means they got the bomb unit to the scene. They had a bomb robot. They had the bomb robot operator. And they surrounded the piece of luggage in that little, whatever they call the container. And then they just go boom. Now, I saw the video on Twitter, and people were saying, are you guys noticing how everybody there that's on camera didn't even flinch at all? No one seemed concerned. They just heard a giant explosion. So SeaTac apparently got on the PA and said, okay, everybody, we don't think it's a big deal. obviously, because you're still in the airport. But we're going to have to explode this little thing. We're going to have to go boom, boom. You're going to hear a boom sound. It's fine. It's nothing. Relax. I mean, sure, there's a possibility that there could be a, you know, a small nuclear weapon in there. But the chances of that happening, very, very slim. It could also be weaponized bioweapon, but probably not. So we're just going to go boom, and then you can go back on your way. The sad part is, obviously, this impacted the entire airport, even though it only was part of the airport. Something like this impacts everything, and it closes down the traffic coming in.
I was supposed to leave at 7:10. I got here at 7.
Wow.
We were 2 miles away and got stuck for an hour.
That was Jacob talking with our sister station, Cairo News Radio. He heard the package getting detonated.
Made an announcement, said, you're going to hear a loud explosion. See? In a few seconds. And then they said, fire in the hole, 3, 2, 1, and then you heard the boom.
Here again is my favorite part of the story, and it has nothing really to do directly with what happened. Alaska, after this had been figured out and detonated, Alaska sent out this tweet. And I believe every part of it is just a huge lie. All areas of Seattle International Airport have reopened. I like that they don't say SEA. It will take time to ramp operations back up to normal, and residual impacts are likely. Why don't you just send everyone literally just back to their workstations to do work again? This has no impact whatsoever. It's like when there's a little bit of snow and they cancel 4,000 flights over the course of the following month. Because, well, you know, everything backs up. They always, it feels like they're always looking for an excuse to not do their normal routes.
Yeah. Well, and I don't understand how.
Yeah.
Well, yes, I agree with you.
Okay.
But how does this cancel flights? Wouldn't they shut down the whole airport?
Well, no,
or
that part.
Or how are people missing flights, I mean?
Well, because you can't get through ticketing. Get
but
your
are planes
somewhere.
Leaving? Shouldn't the flights be delayed? If
they can only be delayed for so long.
Exploding things at the airport?
Well, at some point, you've got a schedule. You can't just fit in a plane, not just to take off, but also to land elsewhere. Like, for all we know, we're talking about going into Chicago, O'Hare, or JFK, right? I mean, that's the only thing I can think of. You're right in a general sense of, can't you just wait? You can wait for a certain point, and then think of it this way. Planes land, where are they going to go?
I don't know.
You've got this empty plane there, and maybe even the pilot or the crew couldn't get through. Again, depending on the flight. They could obviously just, but they closed the lanes coming in. So like that guy, Jacob, who was in line for, or who was in traffic for 4 hours.
I don't know. I think he's going to miss his flight anyways.
Yeah, actually, he did seem like he was, let's just say, irresponsible. I still maintain a perfect record. Knock on wood, it doesn't change. I get to the airport, with the exception of with international flights, I get to the airport with maybe 20 minutes to spare. When I get through security, when I do it the right way, and I usually am good at it, I'm only wandering to the wherever they put me. It's usually Delta, so it's in Terminal C. Maybe 5 minutes. When I get there, someone makes awkward small talk with me because they recognize me. Then I tell them I'm not interested in a way that I don't have to use my words, but just my facial expression. And then they open the flight to get on. And obviously I go second after the kids and the veterans. Why you give me that look?
I don't know. You love talking about your travel.
First class?
Yeah, the fact that you fly first class. Everybody knows.
When you walk by me, do you see me judge you? Can you tell?
Yeah.
Right? You can tell. What do you think I'm thinking?
I'm better than you.
Yeah. Well, that's you as my producer, but I'm saying it.
Well, no, you don't do that just to me.
That's true. You get to pick the news when we come back. You get to vote on the story you want me to talk about. Story number one. The public versus Anthony Fauci. Fauci gets ripped during the early stages of COVID when he tried to convince people to get vaccinated. Turns out he lied. I've got the video. Or comedian Chris Rock, he's getting involved saying, you're stupid for wanting to arrest Trump. Makes an interesting argument. Which story do you want me to cover? Which audio do you want me to play? 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send a text. 1-800-465-8770.
You picked the topic on the Jason Rance Show.
Indeed you do, and you made the right decision. You decided to jump on the Public versus Fauci story. PBS has a show out. I'm not familiar with anything on PBS. I just know that they were embedded with Anthony Fauci and Muriel Bowser, the mayor of Washington, D.C., and this was back in 2021. And they were going around from door to door to door trying to get people to get the vaccine. The majority of the people that they contacted due in large part to the neighborhood that they just happened to be in, but they were specifically targeting the vaccine hesitant, and there is a disproportionate number of Black residents who are vaccine hesitant for a variety of reasons. So they were going out there, and what I find so curious to me is they wanted to convince the vaccine hesitant to trust them, that they would never lead them astray. And yet what they were telling them, even at the time, they knew was false, which I can't imagine in the long term serves the best interests of trying to convince the vaccine hesitant, people who are already distrustful. It doesn't seem to work when you lie to them. Even if you were able to convince them in the short term to get vaccinated, one dude was just like, I don't want you on my front doorstep. Can you just go away and leave me be?
People in America are not settled with the information that's been given to us right now.
So I'm not going to be lining up taking a shot on a vaccination for something that wasn't clear in the first place. And then you all create a shot in miraculous time. It takes years to create vaccination.
Well, it used to take years.
Okay, it used to.
You know how many years were invested in this,
a billion.
In this approach?
Or 20.
About 20 years of science to get us to be able to do it.
20 years is not enough. And 9 months is definitely not enough.
Now, that part is more, 20 years is enough. 9 months, what he's arguing, and there's a valid point to be made, especially given what we now know about the vaccine. 9 months was clearly not enough time to develop a vaccine that worked. And by worked, I mean does what a vaccine is supposed to do, which is prevent you from getting the disease or the virus or whatever it is you're trying to be protected from. There is a difference between like proactive treatment and therapeutics and a vaccine. When we're talking about an actual vaccine, there are, in fact, breakthrough cases. That happens. But in this case, there were way too many breakthrough cases for anyone to think that this vaccine was effective.
Nobody would be taking no vaccination that you all came up with.
The only reason I'm talking to you right now, as close as we are, is that I've been vaccinated.
Right.
Oh. But if it allow thousands of people like you don't get vaccinated, you're going to let this virus continue to percolate in this country and in this world.
Something like the common flu then, right?
I love his response there. But again, they knew at the time that the vaccine did not stop the spread of COVID. They knew at the time. They thought, and there's data to suggest this is true still, but less and less data, that it cuts down on the seriousness of your infection. They could have honestly just said that, and I think it would have been a meaningful approach to the vaccine. I think that's a meaningful argument. Look, it's not going to stop you from getting COVID, but it changes your chances of getting very ill or dying by insert whatever percentage there is. I think that would have convinced people to get the vaccine, or at least as many people to get the vaccine as was successful with what they did. But at the same time, had they done it that way, they would have cut down on the amount of people who just do not trust this institution of public health now. I am in the position where I no longer trust public health on certain issues because you can see where they're getting political. But they were lying here. This wasn't a mistruth. Dr. Deborah Birx pointed out that they knew that the vaccine wasn't going to stop the spread of COVID.
It's much more serious than the flu. Though.
Well, the flu kills a lot of people annually, yeah. too.
You know how many people died of the flu the last year? I mean, not this year, virtually none.
A billion.
But the previous year,
a billion.
About 20 to 30,000.
That's
how many people have died from COVID-19
trillion.
In the United
trillion.
States?
Trillion.
600,000 Americans.
That's what
well,
I mean.
You, well, that, well the number that you all giving that died, that's once again...
That's you all's number.
You gonna pass?
Yeah, definitely. Because when you start talking about paying people to get vaccinated, when you start talking about incentivizing things to get people vaccinated, there's something else going on with that.
We learn early on the concept he just noted. A little less so nowadays, but what were you never supposed to take from a stranger?
Money? Candy?
Can't money. Of course you take money from a stranger, then you run. Money? Where did that come from? My God. Candy. Wait, you don't take candy from a stranger. Because there's something like, what are you doing? Sure, there's some nice people who just happen to be creepy when offering you free candy, and they don't mean you any harm. But you're told early on, something else is up here. They're basically giving you candy for the shot, except in the form of, I don't remember what the amount was in D.C. But that is going to make someone who's naturally suspicious even more suspicious.
Yeah. Something else going on.
I see it. I get it.
You're right. But I'm glad millions of people like me and most everybody here didn't get in a stick. You know what?
She's with people trying to convince the unvaccinated to get vaccinated. She goes, most of the people with me are vaccinated. Why aren't they all vaccinated? What's going on? Why didn't everyone get it?
Their incentive was protecting their health and protecting the city. But I won't keep you anymore.
It's okay, because my incentive, y'all campaign is done. About fear. It's about inciting fear in people. You all attack people with fear. That's what this pandemic is. It's a fear. It's fear, this pandemic. That's all it is.
Good for him pushing back. And I thought he did it in a respectful way. It was civil. He raised his voice a little bit, I guess. But that was just out of passion. There's a lot more videos like this. But remember, it was the MAGA Trumpers that didn't want to get vaccinated. Something tells me he probably wasn't a MAGA Republican. 1-800-465-8770 for your text messages. You are listening to The Jason Rantz Show.